Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Joyeux Noël à l'école de peur. Bonsoir Joe. Nous devrions faire tout l'épisode en français.
Oui.
Oui.
Ah, yes. We're going to get very French today with Deadly Games, or what's it actually called? 3615 Code
Paul Noël.
Noël. Ah, but we'll get into that and all the Frenchiness to come.
Oh my God, all the Frenchiness.
Yes. How are you?
I'm fine.
Comment vas-tu?
Ça va bien.
Ah!
Ça va bien.
Bien, ça va bien.
Ça va bien. Je suis fatigué.
You're tired?
Sure.
Are you trying to make the Jack McFarlane joke when he's like,
both.
Je suis fatigué.
Yes. Je suis fatigué. Voulez-vous le bain? Did I say I want butter?
I love butter.
Yeah.
Voulez-vous? Yeah. That's more like, would you like?
Oh, do you want
voulez-vous?
Butter?
Like, voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
Voulez-vous ce soir?
Yes, I always want butter. What is the blanc beurre, whatever that, like the, where you put the, it's like that white sauce, like for fish.
Like beurre blanc?
Yeah, beurre blanc. That's what I was trying to think of.
The beurre blanc?
Beurre blanc. Anyways, enough French for now.
Yeah, there's plenty ahead.
How's your week been?
My week has been fine. I have, you know, it's like the last few weeks of work.
Yeah,
of
this
the
is
year.
Such a weird time of year. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm I'm very, very, you know, lucky, privileged, blessed, whatever the fuck we're saying,
mm-hmm.
You know, that I'm not working because I'm just focusing on school right now. But mm-hmm. I remember how weird of a time this would be at work because it's like, yeah. You don't want to start anything. You don't want to like, you know, it's just very, there's just no motivation.
No.
Because, you know, it's like we have the, you know, the Thanksgiving, Friendsgiving, Indigenous Solidarity, Harvest, Holiday. And that just kind of kicks off this really like, why the fuck do anything until
yeah.
like the second week of January?
Yeah, we should do what the Europeans do, which is they just take the month of December off.
I agree. I think everybody should get a full paid, like whatever it is from, you know, well, really from Halloween until like January 7th or whatever. That the second Monday in January. That should be the holiday.
Yes.
October whole time. 31st to whatever that is. Second
no,
Monday.
November 1st, right? November 1st to the
no,
second.
No, but I want all day Halloween off to prepare.
Oh, got it. To know. Prepare for what?
You know, like.
Haven't you been preparing for 30 days before?
No, it's true. But like, I feel like, you know, one thing about me is as crazy I'm about Halloween. I'm not really into like costumes and stuff. Like, think about how often you've really seen me get fully, like, dressed up. It's rare. Like, I'm just... I'm
once,
not,
twice,
yeah,
maybe?
I'm not really... But I would be more into it, I think, if I had, like, all day to, like, work on something, rather than getting
all... I feel
all,
like you would need, like, a week.
Having to, like... Yeah, but doing makeup and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, not really the point. I mean, I have done some. I mean, when we have our typical Halloween parties, which we've kind of dispensed with since mm-hmm. COVID happened... But regardless, I feel like, yes, we just need all that time off. It should be totally paid.
mm-hmm.
And then we'll all return in January.
Yes.
I think that'd be fine. But yeah, so it's a weird time of year for you.
Yeah, just, you know, because it's like, it's exactly what you said. Like, you don't want to start anything. You don't really feel like there are things that can wait. People
yeah.
are on various... people are taking their vacations at various times, right?
Yeah.
So it's like some people
so
are gone.
You never
gone.
Have everybody you need at
yeah.
once to get anything done.
Exactly. Some people are gone already. Some people are, you know, are... even when we get back from, you know, the winter holidays, like some people
yeah, it takes
will,
a while,
yeah.
I feel. Yeah, that's why I think like that second week in January is pretty much when everybody's kind of back
yeah.
and can like get back to like doing productive things, whatever that means. Let's see. oh my gosh, so much fun doing the Charlie Brown Christmas reading with you on the Geekscape. Now that we're officially part of the Geekscape network, we are coming to you live from Geekscape. That was super fun to do. And I actually watched like all day. I kept it running all day on the big TV. Mm-hmm. While I was like, you know, cleaning or cooking, you know, doing various things. And it was really fun just to see everybody having a good time on there.
You're getting your ideas for next year for us?
Yeah, I do. I hope that we'll be able to do a full segment next year. And we really have to like plan it and commit to it because we kept talking about doing things. And then by the time we had a really good idea, it was kind of too late.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Matt is very, very good about organizing all that. But it's a lot to organize. So, you know, you can't really come in on the 11th hour with like, let's do this thing. Like,
let's do this thing that's kind of complicated.
Right.
But
yeah. So I really firmly believe that we need to get our winter holiday shit done in like July, August. That way it's done. I really do. Yeah. But here we are producing the show live for you on air. And that wasn't really the point. The point was to say how much fun we had.
Yeah.
And it was great to see people, see people's faces. I, you know, every time we all kind of get together and do stuff like that, it just, again, makes me sad about, you know, that we don't all live closer.
Yeah.
I would love like seeing like, you
cul-de-sac.
Know,
see,
house and
French.
There we go. Look at you. Just you're incorporating it. Yeah, exactly. Like seeing Matt's house and stuff and people hanging out. And I'm like, see, I would love to just go down there and hang out.
Yeah.
You know, but I'd have to get on a flight and do the whole thing.
It's like that house is this house, but over there.
Exactly. Yeah. So I hope one day we will get to visit. We'll see. We've got ideas. So, but that'll wait for the new year. What else is going on? Yesterday was the 100th birthday of Vampyra.
Oh!
Yeah, kind of cool. December 11th. 100 years of Myla Nurmi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We've got my little poster over there of her. I admittedly, you know, didn't have such a love for her until, like, you know, until I found out about her, I guess, which is the true of all things, right?
Yeah. I did not love it until I knew it.
Until I knew it. But now I'm glad I did, and I'm glad that we have, like, this history of horror hostesses. And, you know, I'm curious if we'll ever have something like that again. Like, you know, will somebody pick up Elvira's mantle, you know, as something that's, like, I feel like there's just too much, it's too much out there nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to break through the noise, break through the static. But I did want to just commemorate that for a moment, take a minute to think, like, you know, wow, in the 50s, there was this goth queen hosting midnight movies, and she kind of made the character up and was, like, in control of it. And that's fucking cool.
Until she wasn't, right?
Well, that's a whole other thing, you know. But, I mean, she left it, and then the whole drama between her and Cassandra Peterson for, you know, creating a new version of Vampyra. But we're not talking about that. Today we're just celebrating the fact that she did exist and she paved the way for someone like Elvira and other horror movie hosts that have come and gone. I know there are others out there like Svengoolie, and I think he's kind of like that. And Joe Bob Briggs, I feel, is like a horror host. But it's, I mean, it's really not the same. Like a campy, you know, gothy, like, you know, character, like a drag queen. I mean, in a way, like Vampyra is also, I feel like, a drag character, like Elvira.
Isn't Peaches Christ?
Yeah. I would love for Peaches Christ to have like a national television series. I think that'd be really fucking cool. But anyways, I know Sharon Needles tried to make that happen and did host a couple of like scary things on Logo or whatnot, but it's hard again to make those sorts of things happen. Yeah. So we're just honoring,
and, you know, Vampyra. Not be shitty.
Well, yeah, that's a whole other, again, a whole other ball of wax to get into. So, you know, I recommend checking out Vampyra if you've not heard of her before. I feel like you would have seen her. I kind of feel the same way about Elvira when people are like, oh, I don't know who that is. And I show them a picture of them. Oh, yeah, I know who that is. Went, yeah, I know. I knew you would.
You've seen her, but you don't know her.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I just thought that was really cool. Vampyra, 100 years since she was born. Very cool. Did you finish Wednesday?
I've not even started Wednesday.
Oh, I thought we talked about that. I thought you watched it.
No.
Okay, well, no. Scratch that off the list. We'll get to it.
What's interesting, though, about Wednesday, this is a tangent, but... Mm-hmm.
Imagine.
There is... I recently discovered TikToker person, you know, like that does those dances, that dances on TikTok. And his name is Brian Esperon, and he is a dancer and choreographer, but he is from Guam.
Oh, cool.
And he has like 2 million people following him, but he does these cool videos on his TikTok and Instagram where he... for like beat for beat does a remake of a dance sequence from a movie. So I've watched his videos where he like does a dance sequence from like Encanto, during the We Don't Talk About Bruno stuff. He's known for creating the dance for the WAP challenge.
Oh, okay.
So, and I was like, oh shit, I didn't know he did that. And so, like, you know, that was really fun. And that's probably how he has millions of people, you know.
What was his name again?
Brian Esperon, B-R-I-A-N. And then, you know, well, we can produce the show after.
Yeah, but no, very cool.
But he's from Guam. And what was cool was that he was, for Halloween, he went as Megan.
Very nice.
From Megan. From the upcoming movie Megan.
I love that there's already all these costumes and stuff of her, and the film hasn't even like come out yet.
Yeah. They know, these people know what they're doing.
I know.
But yeah. he went as Megan for Halloween and did the dance that Megan does. And then the reason why I found him is because I guess I was seeing a bunch of people going to the premiere. Sam went to the premiere and he was there.
Oh, very cool.
And he did the dance. And but if you look him up, we'll post a link to it. He does the Wednesday dance from the new show.
Very cool.
Which is really cool. And he's like it dressed as Wednesday and stuff. And
how fun.
It's delightful.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. Yeah, she does. There's a whole, you know, dance sequence that they wanted to sort of honor Wednesday's. Because like Christina Ricci, it's not like she dances. I mean, there's a scene in the first Addams Family movie where she's dancing with one of the cousins, and it's really, you know, kind of a string. He's like swinging her like back and forth. And then on the Addams Family TV series, you know, Wednesday does, there's some famous like dancing sequences. So it was kind of cool to see that kind of echoed. And she based it on different pieces of different, you know, goth dances, Susie and the Banshees. She credited the original actress who played Wednesday on the 60s TV series as well. And it's a fun, cute little sequence to the Cramps' Goo Goo Muck.
Yes, yes.
Which, or Teenage Goo Goo Muck, whatever that song is called. Yeah, really fun. But we'll have to wait until you watch it to really do a full deep dive. What about House of the Dragon?
Oh, absolutely.
You did watch that.
And are you guys done?
We finished it. Yes, finally.
Okay, spoilers for Hot D then. What did you think?
I mean, I was not for it at all. I mean, and I'll continue to watch it because, you know, it was just like we did watch Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I think I've talked about that on the show before. It took us 4 months. We watched all of it.
Yeah.
A couple of years
ago. You started like the day the finale aired.
Basically. Yeah. And we just powered through, watched the whole thing because Jeffrey really wanted to. And I was like, well, I'll join you in this crusade.
this fool's errand.
You know, it's just sometimes a real trudge. And I kind of feel the same way. I'm watching this and it feels like I'm rewatching Game of Thrones. It's a lot of the same dynamics, same conversations.
More incest, though.
Yeah. Also more dragons, at least right at the beginning, we get dragons. And I thought that was kind of cool. And the look of it is great. I love Eve Best.
She's really good.
I like that actress a lot ever since I first saw her. My introduction to her was Nurse Jackie. I'm sure she's done a million things before that, but that's kind of how I first saw her. And I really love her character in that. So I was excited to see her, you know, acting.
Being a badass.
Yeah, being pretty badass. Oh. There's just, you know, there were some scenes that are really hard to sit through. You know, again, pregnancy is horror. You can't have a baby on television or in a movie because bad shit will happen to you.
Yeah.
And those
scenes were written by women.
Yeah, I'm very, very interested in. I want to talk with one of my friends about it. She's been itching now that we finished it because I am curious to get more, you know, like, am I just like being too sensitive? Because it just, there's a real cruelty in it, I felt watching it. I'm just like, gosh, this is so cruel.
But I think the Targaryens were that cruel, though.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I get it. Like, there's something very real about, like, again, I mean, we're still having these conversations, like, let the mother die as long as the baby lives. Like, mm-hmm. that's the priority is the child's life. That's a discourse that we're having.
I think it's interesting because, like, this season, as far as, like, from a writer-director standpoint, is, like, the season of Game of, like, a season of Game of Thrones where, like, there were half the episodes were directed by women.
Yeah.
And there was even an episode that was written by a woman. So there was one, I forget which one, but there's the first time ever one episode of a Game of Thrones property that was directed and written by women.
The same women or the
two
same
different
women.
Women.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But, you know, fascinating and interesting. And I think all of it's, I think it was a necessary thing for them to do for the show. But you're right, because it's like falling into those same tropes, right? I mean, even the first episode, the Queen Emma is just like, you know, our battlefield is in the bedroom and the giving birth, and then intercutting that with the tournament and, you know, the fake battle opposed to the real battle that's going on. And
yeah. Yeah. And I just struggle with that. What was her name? Lena.
Oh, where she? Yes, Lena.
Yeah, I mean that whole thing. Like, it's like
with Baelon, with Rhaegar.
Vhagar.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that whole thing. It's like she's got other children. She has a whole life to live, and she's like, oh, this pregnancy is so complicated. I'm going to be burned up alive by my fucking dragon. You know, instead of like suffer this humiliation of not having this baby. I'm like, I'm sure if you just keep waiting, like, eventually the baby will come. Like, yeah. Like, it just, the whole thing confused me. And I'm like, you have these like incredible daughters who have like these futures. Like, what the fuck? So I don't know. I also understand that this just, like, this isn't made for me. Like, I'm just not the demographic for, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones. Apologies if I'm offending anybody for putting all those things together. But to me, that constitutes like a specific kind of genre.
A genre.
You know, we're just being overly French today. But like, it's like, particular types of people gravitate towards those sorts of things. Yeah. You know, I'm not entertained by Lord of the Rings. I'm not very much entertained by House of the Dragon. There were storylines that I did enjoy and things, and I will continue to watch it because Jeffrey wants to watch it, and I want to, like, you know, hang out with him and indulge in stuff that he also loves. That's it's not all about me.
What?
No, can't be 24/7 horror all the time.
No.
But it's, yeah, I want to be careful critiquing it because I don't understand the
appeal.
No, that's not what I mean. I do understand the appeal for people that it appeals to.
Sure.
I understand that. But what I mean is, like, I didn't grow up watching and reading these kinds of books or playing these kinds of fantasy games.
Sure.
I'm not a fantasy of that type, like swords. What do they call it? It's like, it's a thing, like
high fantasy, like it's
swords and dragons and those kinds of things. They're not
LARPing, like live action role playing.
Well, no, I mean, I guess that could be included in that. Renaissance fair. I'm not one of those kinds of people. Yeah. This very much is in that kind of realm that, like, I just don't have enough knowledge about to like critique it.
Sure.
I feel, I mean, I can feel the way I do, like, feminist wise, but again, I feel like I might be overstepping that.
Mm.
Again, like, if women are going to tell these stories, that's one thing, But again, like the critique about like Game of Thrones being like a lot of men writing that, lots of rape, lots of sexual violence. Like, can we not imagine, this is fantasy, can we not imagine another world?
Sure.
But also balancing that with like, you know, some people that I really respect writing about like the truth of war and the truth of the time periods that that these are kind of pulling from.
Yeah.
So we can't totally deny either. So I don't know. I guess the thing is I just shouldn't fucking talk about it because I may not know enough. Not that that ever stops me. But.
No, it doesn't stop me either. So I also didn't grow up with fantasy in that way. Like I didn't read fantasy novels. I tried to read Fellowship of the Ring and like that crashed and burned so much. Tried to read Fellowship of the Ring, tried to read, you know, tried Dungeons and Dragons, was not really interested in it.
Yeah.
So like when I approach these fantasy movies, it's from a cinematic place because like I am able to suspend the disbelief and do all the stuff. And like, just like with Marvel movies, right? It's a different kind of fantasy and they have a different, there's different canon and lore that's attached to
that. Which is
also
something that I'm not, you know, I just don't know about.
Yeah. I highly recommend for folks, we've probably talked about them a lot on the show in other ways, but like, if you are going to watch like Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power or House of the Dragon, there's this great podcast called Decoding TV hosted by David Chen. And he has been recapping TV and film for years, but he recently launched this year his Decoding TV podcast. And he does different shows at any given time, but he does he recaps them with a person who's like an expert in that type of show or lore, and breaks it down he does it week by week. He has a separate podcast called Cast of Kings that he does with another person who is a Game of Thrones expert. And that one's cool because it's purposely set up that he is a TV watcher, has never read any of the books. And then the person who he recaps with, whose name's escaping me at the moment, but she is a person who's read all the books and is very up on the behind the stuff lore. So if you're the person who's like, I don't know why they're doing this, or, you know, I can't keep everybody straight, I highly recommend listening to Cast of Kings for House of the Dragon and other Game of Thrones episodes, and then watching Decoding TV for like Lord of the Rings, for, you know, all these other Andor. He does one for Andor. He does one for he just did one for The Crown, where he brings on his wife, who is like obsessed with the royals and like modern royal history. They're doing a season 2 of The White Lotus right now. Like all of these folks that are coming in, and it's been one of my favorite ways to kind of talk about and unpack that type of TV.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate that suggestion. Maybe I'll have to like go and listen to some of it just to get sort of a better like perspective. You know, again, we bring, you know, to quote Roxane Gay recently, the observer brings themselves to whatever they're engaging with. And so for me watching it, there were just parts that were kind of uncomfortable and stuff that I'm like, well, in the decade or so of Game of Thrones, George R.R. Martin media, it just didn't feel like it had evolved much. But again, this is also like set, 127 years before the events of Game of Thrones.
So like theoretically,
so even more,
it could be worse.
Right.
Should be much worse.
Should be worse. But I mean, you know, there's intrigue and drama. Yeah. So there was definitely stuff that I'm like, well, this is fun.
I think what's upsetting for me is the fact that like everything that's being set in motion is being done because of a misunderstanding.
Yes, which is delightful.
Like, that's, I mean, from a plot
Right. So,
like,
yeah.
It's frustrating, but it's also like, you know, I'm going to watch it because
the dramatic,
like,
irony of it all, I think they call that.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Come on, English.
There we go. Yes. I do enjoy that.
Allez, anglais.
There we go. Allons-y. All right. Well, yeah. So make of that what you will, dear listener, if you want to watch House of the Dragon or not.
Because you're going to be, you know, you're going to be in your bed, you know, during the winter holidays, binging something.
Yeah, why not?
Why not, you know, also add some podcasts into that?
I am frustrated that they say that the next season probably won't be out till 2024, which is why I don't want to watch these shows. I told Jeffrey that. I'm like, we waited for Game of Thrones to be done so we could just watch the whole thing, and I would rather have waited for House of the Dragon to be totally done to watch it, because I'm just frustrated by the fact that it's going to take like a year and a half. And I get it. It's production and all the stuff that goes into it. I mean, it's overall very well done. The CGI animals kind of suck outside of the dragons, oddly enough. I think the dragons look pretty good. Mm-hmm. But you can feel the budget, the clothes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. The fashion of it all. Like, it is fun to look at in some ways.
Yeah.
It's just, again, I really do understand that it's not really made for me. So I probably shouldn't be giving too much of an opinion on it other than what I've already said. So with that, we'll take a quick break and be back to discuss Deadly Games. All right. Well, we are back continuing our holiday programming 2022.
Oh, hold on. I need to press FRA for French.
No. But yes, today, if you haven't guessed, the film we're discussing is a French film. 36-16 Code Père Noël, which is 36-15 Code Father Christmas, which is a Minitel dialing number. We'll talk a little bit about Minitel in a bit. It's also known as Deadly Games, Dial Code Santa Claus, Game Over, and Hide and Freak. So look at that. Got lots of names.
Ooh, I like Hide and Freak.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. That sounds like a podcast name. Like, somebody should come up with that. Anyways, 1989 French horror thriller film directed by, written and directed by René Manzur.
If you are like Gomez Adams and you love it when someone speaks French to you, you know, now's the time to turn the volume up and listen to Joshua pronounce every French name in the credits. Here we go.
Well, there we go. Starring Brigitte Fossé, Louis Ducreux, that's a fun one, Ducreux, Patrick Florsheim, that's more of a German kind of name. François-Éric Gendron, Stéphane Legros, Alain Lalin. So fun. Lots of names. I don't think I'm pronouncing these all exactly correct, but it's fun just to, you know.
He also said different names there besides Patrick Florsheim.
We're all
he didn't say all names. One name. It doesn't all sound the same.
The guy playing Le Père Noël, which is Father Christmas, is the German guy.
Is Patrick Florsheim?
Patrick Florsheim. Florsheim? Flairsheim? Florsheim?
Yeah, I think Florsheim.
Florsheim. Anyway, so an outsider in other ways, possibly.
Mm.
But no, I mean, I'm sure he's a French actor. Just happens to have a kind of a German-sounding name.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, the film is about Thomas de Frémont. He is a child prodigy, I guess is a good way to put it. He's obsessed with action movies and war games, and he lives in this castle with his grandpa, his grandpère, and his mama. They are obviously very wealthy or from wealth. The house is filled with toys and trapdoors. It's at a literal castle. All kinds of cool stuff happening in it. Perfect for a young boy to run around with his little dog.
A too smart young boy.
Very too smart, yes. And so he, you know, wants Santa Claus to visit him. And unfortunately for him, Santa Claus arrives as a rather deranged maybe homeless person. I don't know. The mental health conversation has not yet been happening in 1980s, late 1980s French cinema. But that's who shows up and promptly goes on murdering everybody. And he has to get very creative to fight Le Père Noël, the evil Père Noël, even. He's a bad dude. And or possibly just a very sick person who needs public support. So he wouldn't be breaking into children's houses.
Doesn't France have socialized medicine?
I'm sure it does. Some people fall through the cracks. You know, you can't get everybody. You know, even with the best system in the world.
So what
the French is? The France have the best system. But
so what you're saying is that when that little girl like shaded him and said, "You don't look like Father Christmas," and he slapped her across the face.
Right.
That the Madame de Florent for Fremont. The Dan Fremont should have actually sent him to a clinic.
He maybe should have been
arrested.
Given like a nice behavioral health assessment and possibly put up for a nice 72 hours in the loveliest.
Yes. What's 5150 in French, Joshua? Like,
what would that be? Cinq ans? I'm not sure what they have there, though. I'm not sure about the French. Maybe one day I'll find out. Anyways, the point is that, yes, Santa Claus goes on a murder spree. And much like another popular holiday classic film starring a young Macaulay Culkin, he does lots of booby traps and things to fight back. Joe, what'd you think of Deadly Games?
I'm going to struggle to remember the name of this film.
It's got like 15 different.
Yeah, so.
I don't know why they called it Deadly Games, except that I guess, he is playing Deadly Games with Santa Claus. But the other one is Dial Code Santa Claus.
That makes more sense to me.
They called it that.
Yeah. I think Deadly Games, I think Santa's also playing a deadly game with him. What did I think? I thought it was fine. I would not watch it again. This is a movie where if you put it on for your scary Christmas, I would leave before you put it on. I would leave or I would go take a nap or something. I'd come back for, Krampus or something. But.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe you didn't think it was fun. I really thought it was a good time.
I mean, it's also just kind of like it kind of reeks of that. It reeks of the 80s in that, like, all of a sudden, like, the secret passageway is, like, this liminal space of, like, historic toys.
Yeah.
Like, which was just, that kind of took me out of it. And then the sequence of, like, him, Santa, getting, like, you know, the different booby traps reminded me a lot of the reasons why I hate Audition. Because like none of that's deterring this guy. That's the other thing too, is that like it was creepy in that it's like this is like Mike Myers, like he's like this Mike Myers quality, like the unrelenting like assailant, right?
Right.
But you know, it was fine. It was fun. It was good to watch with a group of people, but I don't think I'd watch this again.
Yeah, this will definitely show up probably next year and paired with Violent Night. So that's kind of where I pulled this from. So in reading almost every single thing I read about Violent Night, which we talked about last week. So if you haven't heard that episode, go back and listen. But this movie was mentioned.
Mm.
And so I was like, well, that'll be perfect. We'll go back and watch that and see how it pairs up. And I would definitely show them back to back. I think that would be a nice pairing.
Sure.
It is definitely strange. I'm not saying that it's a great film by any stretch, but there's some cool, interesting stuff happening in it as a French film in that time period.
Yeah.
It's
very French. It's very, but it's also just very dated. And I tried really hard, I guess, in the beginning to not be, in the beginning of this podcast, to not be someone who is like, I didn't like it because it was old. And now I've become a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, but you know, who was it? Tom Savini, I think, was commenting on something like that, because it's like, it's not old if you've never seen it.
Yeah.
It's new to you.
No, it's old. It's fucking old. Like,
you're fucking old.
You know, this is where you start talking about Minitel, because
you're old,
like,
at heart.
Because it went, because that's the other thing.
Of, no, it's true. Yeah,
that's the other thing about like it. It's like exactly. You have like this dated thing, and it's and like the it's such a huge plot point, right? Like when things are that niche and specific. Like, you, it doesn't feel like, even with Better Watch Out, right? Better Watch Out could happen anywhere. There's nothing about the technology or the location or any of the like particular plot points that you couldn't do that anywhere where there was winter, right? This one is like, it's uniquely like in France.
Yes.
A huge mansion, like a kid with a mullet, all of that stuff.
His mullet is awesome.
No, his mullet was probably one of my favorite things. Like the hair in this film was just
it's on point.
Amazing.
So those of you who are not old enough to remember that the internet didn't always come into your house the way it does now. So in France, actually invented in Saint-Savinier, was this thing called Minitel, M-I-N-I-T-E-L, a video or a text, like online chat service kind of thing that they show in the film, which is how he gets in touch with this, because they have, I guess, like Minitel booths all over the place where people can
it was
stop
like,
in and check messages.
It was right in front of that department store.
Yeah, Printemps. And so the boy, he's trying to communicate with Santa Claus on this, which is how the, you know, this deranged guy finds him and, you know, by a bizarre sequence of events ends up being able to find his house and go there. And so, yeah, these were, like machines that users could, they could make online purchases, train reservations, check stock prices, search telephone directory, have a mailbox, chat, in what is now made possible by the World Wide Web. I'm just kind of reading from the Wikipedia here. And it wasn't like retired until June of 2012. And, you know, I'm thinking, they did try something similar here, like they imported parts of it, like in San Francisco and other places, didn't really take off. But you remember in Scream, how she is on the computer sending like a message to 911? Do you remember that scene? When, because they don't have cell phones like at the time. And so when the killer, when Ghostface tries to kill Sydney in her house after she's waiting for Tatum to pick her up.
Yeah.
She's typing to the, and they make fun of it in Scary Movie where she's typing white woman in trouble. And and I was thinking about that, cause I was like, oh, I guess, you know, was that like, I never used the computer that way to like use it like a phone or something to type in. Did you ever?
Not like that.
Yeah. I thought that was strange, but anyways, so it's not,
that seemed like a recent invention.
Ancient. Yeah. You know, but I was just thinking that it kind of reminds me of that. But anyways, the point is that they're using Minitel to like contact, you know, Père Noël. And, you know, so it does play a very important role in the film as the way that that comes together. Nowadays, I mean, what, he would be on like TikTok or something? I don't even know. What do kids use for chat? Like AOL Messenger?
No, it'd be like Instagram. It'd be like Instagram or TikTok.
I slid into Père Noël's DMs and look what all I got for it is, you know, dead dog, R.I.P. Gere, as the dog is called.
Affluent kid in trouble.
Right, there we go. No? But yeah, I agree with you because of that, like when you see things like that in films where there's like a new technology that's so, it's really out of date now in a way. It does root it in a certain place and time. But I thought that was interesting because I learned something. This is Fright School.
Sure,
I never heard of Minitel. I didn't know it was a thing. So reading about it was kind of cool. Finding out about that, you know, a little bit about some, you know, of French customs around.
Infrastructure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then customs around. I mean, that I kind of know because obviously in French class, you know, every year when the holidays would come around, we would learn about French customs. And this film does do a good job of showing off some of those things. For instance, all the typically French people do... have a crèche out, which is a nativity. That's a thing. You pointed out the bûche de Noël,
the chocolate log. Yeah.
Yes, which I would like to have that because it looked delicious.
See, I only know that because it is something that looks really appetizing that I cannot eat because I don't eat chocolate.
That's true. It looks like a giant Swiss Miss roll.
Yeah, I can you make one for me, but like make it like a blonde one, like an albino, you know, bûche de Noël.
There we go. That sounds good. We see the shoes at the very end in front of the fireplace because that's where Père Noël comes and he stuffs little toys and candies and fruit in the boots. That's the what they leave them out. That's part of the their tradition, or they get filled with, you know, coal or bad things if you've been a naughty child.
Yeah.
This doesn't really show the family cup because the mother is obviously, that's one of those, it's again, such a strange conversation because the child is left alone in this giant house on Christmas Eve with his like blind,
diabetic, severely diabetic, infirm,
grandpère.
Poppy.
Which usually on Christmas Eve, that's when the dinner happens and like all of that in France. It's much more like here, I think some some faiths tend to celebrate or some cultures.
The Italian or Italian Americans do the Feast of Seven Fishes on in Latino culture, Nochebuena, in Filipino culture.
Yeah.
Because of Spain, Nochebuena, which is the night before.
Yeah. So typically Christmas Eve becomes sort of the, you know, so yeah, Christmas Eve is typically when it's celebrated, but the mother wants to be out working. Again, maybe this is a comment on that. We do know that the French can be very sexist in their films. So it's like, see, mom, this is what happens when you go to work. Your kid gets attacked by a deranged Santa Claus.
But she also is not like, she is not negligent. That's the other interesting thing.
Well, I don't know. I mean it's a strange situation to just leave your kid alone.
Well, she like
to take care of the. I mean, the grandfather needs insulin. Like, what had happened? Like,
yeah,
was he? Well, oh, I forgot they had caretakers.
They had caretakers,
that's
but
right.
because he
murdered.
Is,
I forgot,
like a prodigy. He's precocious. He understands. He fixes a fucking car.
No, it's true.
I mean,
right.
not well,
right.
but
again, I'm just looking for some sort of meaning in the conversation besides my bizarre ideas about the French Revolution.
No, hold on. Are you going to go there now?
No, I'm not really. I really didn't mean that. That's just the
overcomplicating. You need to, okay, someone's yelling, like, you know, Matt's like, what about the French Revolution?
Well, no, I'm just saying that the French Revolution celebrated its 200th anniversary when this film was being made, and then by the time it came out. So there's just something interesting to me about, like, a film about, like, a super wealthy child and family who are being attacked by... really the most forgotten member of society.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was an interesting conversation. When I was looking for points to bring up and to discuss, again, in the end, the wealthy family all makes it out alive, spoiler alert, and the dog dies, which is terrible, but the French love killing animals, especially on Christmas Eve. Look at L'Intérieur and that cat, which I will forever be mad about.
You were so...
I'm still
I've never seen you so incensed.
My whole life, I will be upset.
That's also the only kill... in the fucking movie.
That's right. But I mean, lots of brutal.
Le Chien? Is that's how you say dog?
Oh, in this movie. Sorry. I thought we were still talking about Inside. Le Chien.
Le Chien.
Yeah. Gier. He is R.I.P. Again.
R.I.P. Gier.
Stab the fuck out of that boy in his mullet, but leave the dog alone, Père Noël. Jeez.
Yeah. With a cake server, no doubt.
I know. But anyways, my point just was, like, in the end, the bad guy is killed and he dies. So it's like he didn't win over on the family or anything. But if he had killed the whole family and then just took up residence in their castle, then maybe we could make a point about the French Revolution. But
well, so,
I was just, you know, overcomplicating it. How can I do that? And so I was like thinking about that, thinking about misogyny, awesome. Thinking about certain messages that the film obviously sends.
I think Tommy is mm-hmm. pretty fucking traumatized by the end of it.
Oh yeah, he's like fucking comatose.
Yeah.
I mean that it's a horrible thing. And you know, you have your mom telling you, like, if you look at Santa, he's gonna turn into an ogre and try to eat you or whatever. So
yeah, which fucking happens.
Right, is what happens. So again, he can go to school, l'école, and tell all of his little friends
that he killed Santa.
That I had to kill Santa because I saw him and he turned into an ogre.
Yeah.
And he killed my dog.
And at the very end, like him, like the very last shot is like, you know, fake bad Santa, like reaching for the boots to like go back up the chimney.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. Just kind of looking. I did think it was interesting watching this and comparing it to Home Alone and Home Alone 2.
Mm-hmm.
I see where the guy's was what he was talking about.
Sure,
a little
too.
Bit. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it'd be a really hard case. So, dear listener, the writer director of this film, René Manzur, has threatened to sue, or did at one point threaten to sue, you know, the makers of Home Alone, saying that they had remade his film. The people behind Home Alone obviously reject that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and say that they just, you know, one of those things, accidental crossover. Obviously, Home Alone isn't as scary as this is meant to be. I mean, by our standards, that's pretty.
Yeah,
it's not.
Yeah.
It wasn't that terrifying. Let's see. Yeah, I kind of. Oh, here we go. I like this quote from Peter Martin of Screen Anarchy. I was utterly bowled over with happiness. Sure, it's your standard clever kid versus Santa Claus home invasion tale made before Home Alone, but it's exceptionally smart, funny, and kind of fiendish, too. It's a great family action movie for families who hate the holidays. Which I would agree with. Wow. There's not really, I mean, again, it feels like this is one of those films that was sort of lost for a while, and Shudder, it got like a re-release, and then Shudder put it
sure.
on, and so it's kind of having a little bit of a renaissance. So there's not a ton really written about it outside of reviews when it came out.
Yet.
But yeah, yet.
But, you know, thanks to Fright School, we have resurrected, You know, Papa Noel, Bad Santa over here.
Papa Noel, I love that. Daddy Claus.
Daddy Claus.
Daddy Claus. Not so much this one. That's more of
David Harbour.
Yes, David Harbour is Zaddy Claus. I don't know what else really to say about the movie.
I don't think we need to say any more.
You're so funny.
I need to be done with it. No, I don't know. Okay, here, let's actually have this conversation, right?
Okay.
Did you ever truly believe in Santa Claus?
Oh, that's a good question, since we are, if you haven't noticed, we're kind of devoting our holiday horror stuff to depictions of Santa Claus. So that's a good question, Joe. Look at you guiding.
Guiding.
I don't remember a time believing in Santa Claus. I'm sure I did, but I found out really early that there wasn't a Santa Claus. And then as the oldest child, I would often accompany my mom for Christmas shopping
mm-hmm.
to pick out toys and things for my siblings. And then because my birthday is the 17th of December, I would often get to choose. Like I would get a Christmas gift that was like a little more expensive, like a little nicer of a toy or something. I got to pick for my
birthday, Christmas.
Yeah. So often I would get to go. So I knew that there wasn't a Santa Claus from a really young age, but I don't remember. I'm sure like 5, 6, 7, I may have believed in Santa Claus. I do remember around my eighth birthday or seventh birthday, my mom came home with a cake that was Santa's head. And that was my birthday cake. And I was like horrified by the whole thing.
She brought you the head of Kris Kringle.
Yeah. Which now in retrospect is actually kind of delightful. But I remember being really upset about it because it's like it already sucked down my birthday be Christmassy.
Yeah.
Around Christmas. So then to have that. And then I kind of like banned it. And I didn't have another real birthday party until I was like 21. And then I didn't have parties at all until I moved here and people was like, oh, no, but we want to like celebrate your birthday. And so you should do something so we can celebrate you. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yep.
And then I started doing like, you know, my dinners that I do every year. But what about you?
My older sister is her birthday's on the 20th of December.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty much why her name is Christine. Because it's close. So like her birthday, but like we always did different stuff. Like I don't, at least as long as I've been alive, we have never done both things, except until we moved here to the mainland and we had to like, you send one package that has both the birthday and the Christmas gifts.
Right.
But usually it comes after Christmas because shipping. As far as like believing in Santa, I think I believed in Santa once, because it's difficult for children in Micronesia to believe in Santa Claus because we don't have chimneys, we don't have, you know, that kind of shit. There is a great commercial that one of the Bank of Guam or something like that did when I was a kid that like showed Santa Claus coming into a screen door, like basically opening like a screen door into a house and eating cookies and leaving. And the Santa Claus movie with Tim Allen.
Oh yeah.
They show that like, even if you don't have a chimney, Christmas magic makes one. The last time I did it, it was like, I think it was around that time when Santa Claus came out and I left out cookies for Santa and he ate them.
And you lived on Guam at that time?
I lived on Guam at that time. And then,
what year did you move to the Maine?
2004. So I was 15.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So a lot of my formative years, like Christmas,
I didn't realize that. I thought that you moved here when you were like 5 or 6.
No.
Wow.
No, I was like 15. I was like, I always like to say,
you talk as if you didn't really spend much time there.
It's
15 years is a big chunk of time. Although I guess cognitively, consciously, really only like 10 years.
Yeah. And then, cause that's the other
By
thing.
By the time you have memories.
Exactly.
And personality and all.
So,
or not a person.
I was like, I came into my own here. I had like, came into my identity here. But, and last year was weird because like when I turned 31 in 2020, it was weird because that was officially the year where I have lived more of my life in America, in the mainland, than I did in Guam. But, it's difficult and challenging to believe in Santa Claus when all media makes it like this very winter weather associated thing.
Was there did you have any other figure?
No, we had Santa. Like Santa was there at the mall. There was always some white guy at the mall. Santa came, you know, Santa would come on a fire truck to throw candy at children.
Okay, I see. I'm just wondering because there's like so in the Père Noël, which again is like Father Christmas in France, because of like the influence of the French, lots of different places obviously kind of picked up the Père Noël thing.
Sure.
And then I thought this was interesting in Louisiana Cajun culture, a version of Papa Noel arrives at Holmes in a pirogue towed by 8 alligators, so like a boat.
Sure, yeah.
So you don't need a chimney.
Yeah.
It's the idea of like that, you know, it's... there used to be... So when I worked a long time ago in this collectible gift store,
sure.
We had a line of Christmas Santa Claus figurines mm-hmm. by mm-hmm. Pipka. Did you ever hear of Pipka? Mm-hmm. And she would make all these different Santas from all over the world. And so each year it was a big deal to get like the new, she would do different and like stuff like that, you know, sure. like Santa Claus with an alligator. And you're like, what the fuck is that all about? And it's like, well, it's a Louisiana Cajun mm-hmm. Creole version.
Yep.
And she would do all these different like figures from all over the world. And so I was just wondering if the, because especially with like what you're saying about like the not having chimneys, it's like, well, was there another story then that he evolved, that Santa evolves to,
maybe not so much a story, but it was a way that they represented Santa on the island, right?
Okay.
So it's like Santa is like, you know, big guy, shorts and an island print shirt, driving driving a carabao, like a water buffalo,
right?
I was like, that's the word that I know it by, a
like
water
a
buffalo
caribou?
Well, we called it a carabao,
okay,
but it's a water buffalo basically.
Okay.
Which like, if you ever get to go to Guam, you have to do it. You just have to get on one when they go to, if you see one at the tourist places, because, you know, I got on one and it's quite fun. It's not like a, rite of passage or, you know, particularly exciting, but it's just fun to get on top of one. And, I actually had a figure at my desk for a little bit of a little carabao, there's great like island Christmas cards that have like, you know, Santa's Claus like with a coconut palm hat.
That's so interesting. Sorry, I'm just falling down this like rabbit hole, because caribou I've heard of before, and that's a reindeer. Like a reindeer yeah. is a caribou. Is that the same animal?
No, it's like
a water buffalo.
Like essentially, yeah, it's like a water buffalo, but they're a beast of burden. Like
Right.
You know, you use them on the ranch to, you know, pull a hoe.
Huh. Fascinating. I love that.
Yeah.
I feel like I remember seeing commercials like that even here, like,
yeah.
you know, of Santa, like, in Hawaiian wear or something.
Yeah. Which, like, for us, is just like, you know, oh, it's just, so it was always really rare to see outside of the mall and a fully air-conditioned place to right. see, like, Santa in a full...
In a full, like, that idea, Coca-Cola.
Exactly.
Trademark Santa.
Exactly.
Sinterklaas. Yeah. Huh. No, I don't really... I don't think that I'd have to ask my brother if he ever believed in Santa Claus. I think we were so, like, such a different kind of, you know, again,
yeah.
like we've discussed on here, we just didn't really do that kind of stuff.
I also think when you're kind of like, when you're an old soul kid, right? Like
yeah.
you, it's more fun to be on the other side of the knowledge,
yeah.
to be on like make it better for other people and...
kids. And I firmly believe in like, I mean, for me personally, because I do remember going to school and kids would talk about Santa Claus bringing them things that were like really nice. And you're mm-hmm. like, well, we didn't get that. So I definitely identify with that conversation that's in culture now about, you know, like be careful what you tell your kids Santa brought them. Because mm-hmm. some kids got iPads and some kids got like a DVD from
yeah.
Santa. And I understand how that can, especially for children, like it's kind of fucked up.
Santa brought me an Apple Watch
right.
and brought you a hug.
Actual apples.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Cause we are fucking hungry.
Yeah.
And I do. That really resonates with me. And I feel like telling kids,
yeah.
like, I don't think there's really necessarily a problem. And we know, I think there's, really good psychological studies out there that we're not really harming kids with these sorts of mm-hmm. lies, structured sort of cultural mythologies. But I do think that there is something to say for that. Like when they go, and I mean, I remember growing up because I already knew there wasn't a Santa, but you have that idea of like really ultra rich, wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we had my aunts married very, very wealthy men. And so their kids would get like just insane gifts for the holidays. And we would always go over there and they'd be walking around with these like purses and stuff that cost thousands of dollars, crying because they only got, you know, one or two gifts.
Yeah.
But it's because they cost $5,000 for some fucking watch and a bag from you know, whoever that was any time of year. So it was definitely kind of fucked up. I think when you think about that and you're like, oh, Santa brought me a Louis Vuitton bag.
Was I not good enough?
Exactly. Right? And so for me, that definitely instilled a lot of that. Yeah. That's one of the reasons that I really hate the holidays is that, like, you know, I started to bring up the commercialization thing, which again, I'm going to, I'll put the link to the Geekscape live stream spectacular, because one, you should donate if you have a couple extra bucks, please throw it at the Big Brothers Big Sisters.
The link is still up, right?
Yeah, the link, it's gonna, I think
the goal
it's gonna
is be $4,000,
which will help two kids be paired, which is awesome, providing the supervision and everything needed to, you know, make those relationships work and support them. Oh, what was I saying? The Christmas thing. I had a whole like thing.
You said you hate Christmas because of this.
Well, just because like that dynamic, because it always made my mom feel really bad about herself. And then we would go home after those things. And at a time of year where it's supposed to be joyous, we're out of school, we get to hang out with family, we get to see family that we don't, you know, get to see every day at the holidays. It's supposed to be this joyous time. Was always really dark and really depressing because of the commercialization. That's what I was going to say, because we did the a Charlie Brown Christmas reading, script reading, and I started to bring it up, but I get it. You know, we wanted to stay kind of joyful and happy and not necessarily go down like a rabbit hole of like dark commercialization and how it affects our psyche. But for me, that was a very real thing. And it really made me hate the holidays because of just how upset my mom would always be. And it's just like, the point is that we're together.
Yeah, and capitalism is isolating. And
capitalism fucking sucks. Yeah, on so many levels, and even it's still play because there is a real pressure to, like, you know, get nice gifts and think about it. And I fucking hate that that's there. So I try to like push it away. And again, that's why I reinvented it and kind of make it my own every year and focus more on like, let's just hang out.
Yeah, one thing that I remember in high school. So like one of my first Christmas is here in the mainland, going to a friend's house and like seeing a ton of presents underneath her tree and just thinking like, oh my God, are they rich? Like, you know, this is just, it was like, and also they were all wrapped already too. Like, you know, my mom was one where like, she's in the bedroom wrapping the Christmas presents like an hour before we're going to open them.
Right.
You know, so like
you did that too.
So you like never truly know what's under the tree. Right. Like we were not that kind of family. Like this is coming out. I still technically need to let my family know what's going on with our white elephant gift exchange.
I love it.
But like, so it's like, you know that something's coming. It's like just things are a little bit last minute, but like, I realized later afterwards that like after the presents were open, I was like, oh, so like what, you know, I talked to her. I'm like, well, what would you get? It's like, oh yeah, you know, my mom, she always gets little things, but wraps them up so you have something to open. So she would like buy boxes of like movie style candy and wrap it up and put it in their stockings. And then you have something you open. But and me, it's like, oh, that's great. Like, you know, things that you're going to use, or that you like, that, you know, is a treat for yourself, but it's not like this grand Christmassy type gesture, right? So I don't know. I think I've really leaned, though I will say I've really leaned in the last few years, that Taurus part of me that loves to receive gifts, and is like being really honest that I do enjoy that. But it's been really difficult to like find gifts for people that are simple but meaningful.
Yeah. That's why it's like the biggest thing you could do for me is like show up and hang out. I love that. That's one of my favorite things of the holidays.
Quality time.
Yeah, quality time. You know. But I do like a gift. Jeffrey's dad was like, the last couple years, like, let's get together, no gifts. Like, you know, I have everything I need. You don't need to buy me anything. I'm like, I want gifts, though. I There's just that part of me that's like, where's my gift?
Yeah.
But no, it is lovely just to be able to get together and see family. However, it is fun seeing what Jeffrey finds, because he's very, it's always interesting to see what he finds for me at this time of year. Because I think I'm a really good gift giver for him. Like, I listen to him all year, and I'll take a note. I have a little note on my thing, of gifts for Jeffrey. So when he says something random, I'm like, oh, that'll be good. I'll get him that, for the holidays. So I'm excited by the gifts that I got him. And I really want to be surprised, because some stuff got delivered. And it was a box, and I thought it was for me, so I started to open it, and then thankfully at the last minute I saw that it was his, so I put it in his office, and then Lily got on top of the box and fell through it.
Oh no.
So then I had to get her out while trying not to see what was in the box. Thankfully I did. I mean, I saw a flash of something, but not enough to really know what it is. But you know what I'm saying?
She didn't emerge from the box covered in blood,
right, or no, nothing like that.
Glitter.
She got on top, because it was a huge box, and the box inside of it was small. Like, it didn't need to be in all this big, huge box, but whatever, not the point. But yeah, so she got up on it, and her little, curvy self fell through it. So then I had to pull her out without trying to see what it, because I do like to be surprised. I don't necessarily want to know what the gifts are, because I think it's a little harder. Obviously, if you look around here, it's hard to buy me gifts, because I buy myself what I fucking want.
Exactly. I'm the same way. I think I spend most of the last few years, it's like, I'm just going to buy myself what I want, because I'm also... I feel like it's difficult to buy for me, because I don't think I'm... I think that I tell people what I like, but I don't tell people what I want.
Right.
And, I know what it is that I want. I also just don't feel like I share that with other people.
Yeah. Well, anyways. Yay.
Yay.
Yeah. Fuck Christmas. Make it your own. Ignore this, bullshit. You're all good enough. Yeah. You're all worthy. You're all valuable. And if anybody bases their relationship with you on what you can buy them, get rid of those people. Yeah. Don't talk to them.
Yeah, don't buy them anything.
Don't buy them anything. Spend it on yourself.
Yeah. What's spend it on yourself in French?
Ugh, I don't even know. What would that be? Spend it on... Treat yourself?
Treat yourself.
What would treat yourself be? I love that, actually. That would be really fun to know, so I can just yell it in French randomly.
Yes.
Faites-vous plaisir. Faites-vous plaisir.
Faites-vous plaisir.
So that's kind of like, I don't even know.
It's a command, right? I don't know if it's like Spanish where it's like, it's a command. So
yeah.
Faites-vous plaisir.
Yeah, it's like allons-y, we were saying earlier, let's go.
Allons-y.
Faites-vous plaisir. And joyeux Noël. We will be back next week with our last episode for December. Because then we're going to take a couple weeks off to enjoy the holidays, the high holy days.
The high holy days.
With our family, and then we will return in January. But we got one more creepy Kris Kringle Christmas creep-tastic... I ran out of words. Film. To watch. So, yes, happy holidays and bonsoir.
Bonsoir. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davy Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.